The Path to Authenticity is brought to you by GIA Miami. Founded by world-class mental health experts, GIA provides advanced care for difficult-to-treat conditions, including anxiety, medication-resistant depression, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Using state-of-the-art methods, GIA can help people recover from conditions when more traditional approaches can't. Dr. Antonello Bonci has assembled an expert team serving international clientele in a modern and resplendent Miami setting. If you or someone you love is suffering from depression, anxiety, OCD, or other mental health concerns, call GIA at 833-713-0828. You can learn more about GIA by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting GIAMiami.com.
Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Elise Gafkin, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity, episode 200 for November 8th, 2022. This one was a lot of fun. It features a photographer named Elise Gafkin, who lives and works in Nashville, Tennessee, photographs a lot of musicians. And I think you're going to enjoy it. Here you go. Elise Gafkin. I guess I saw you on Instagram, and I got to say, I was scrolling earlier. And noticed that Margot Price tagged you in her story, you know, like an hour ago. So I've been looking forward to nerding out a little bit with you because you seem to photograph a lot of the musicians who I enjoy listening to. So it's really cool to have you on the show. So,
thanks.
So tell us about what you do. What's a day in the life of Elise?
Well, it varies depending on what's going on that day. So, you know, if I have a shoot that day, it's all loading in, loading out, setting up. If I don't, I'm either editing photos or sending emails, prepping for the next shoot, or possibly meeting with people. Like yesterday, I just had to go to RCA Studio B to meet with the band that I'm photographing on Sunday.
Okay.
To kind of listen to the music they're recording and get a vibe going for it and talk about the photo shoot, what they want out of it and what I want out of it, and kind of come to an agreement. And so I did that yesterday. It's always different, which I enjoy because I can't do the 9-to-5 office thing. So This is definitely the path for me.
So how did you end up shooting musicians?
Yeah. So I grew up doing music my whole life. My whole family is very musical. You know, me and my three other siblings sang in church from a very young age. My mom was a pianist. I was in show choirs and musicals, and I played drums in the band. And so music was a big part of my life always. And when I decided to go to school for photography, I wanted to do documentary initially. But, you know, I missed the music part of my life. So I just kind of made it a point to try to become a music portrait photographer when I was in college. And that's kind of how I got to that place. And then I did everything I could to get there.
So it was just a way to weave it all together for you.
Exactly. Yeah. So I get the visual side and the music side every day, which is great for me personally.
So your family's very musical and you played drums.
I did. It was fourth grade. You get to choose an instrument if you want to be in band or orchestra. And my mom was not letting us play any string instruments. She did not want to hear us try to learn string instruments in the house. So I chose drums.
Wow. That's so funny because, I think typically a parent would rather have you try to play a string instrument than have you playing drums in the house.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I mostly practiced at school, I guess. One of my older sisters had gotten a drum kit when I was, you know, probably like 8 years old. And so I was always intrigued by it. Mm-hmm. And my brother, he played drums in band for a short stint. And so did my sister. And I just thought it was cool. Yeah. So, I played in concert band and then marching band in high school. Played the quints in high school, and we actually got to play in the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
It was super fun. I miss playing the quints.
So now you grew up in Ohio?
Yes. I grew up in middle of Ohio in the country, grew up playing in cornfields and bean fields.
Oh boy. Well, I grew up probably 400 miles due west of you.
Oh, really?
In a factory town in central Indiana that is surrounded by cornfields and bean fields.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I live in South Florida. I've been in West Palm Beach for about a little over 20 years. And it's nice to come across Midwesterners.
You know, I come across them all the time here. There's so many in Nashville.
Yeah.
So it is nice. So there's something about it. You know, I love that I'm from there, but I also love that I don't live there anymore.
Yes. I can relate to that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Nashville is just, it's almost like the Midwest, only nicer. I mean, the people, you know, the time I've spent there, I've just been so amazed at how warm people are.
It's definitely got that Southern charm for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've heard it described as a big city with a small town feel. And it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
So now what kind of music are you into? Are you just into everything or?
I wouldn't say everything, but I do like a lot of genres. Depends on my mood, you know. Rock and roll is number one. Soul music, blues music. Those are my favorites. I love folk music too. And it just kind of depends on what I'm in the mood for. Yeah. Or what kind of mood I need to set.
Yeah, yeah. Well, music's really powerful that way, isn't it?
It really is.
And it takes me back in time to listen to certain things, and it will elicit emotions from that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Run DMC was early high school for me, you know.
Love it.
And, my rap experience isn't very broad. It kind of stopped at the Beastie Boys. But
hey, that's okay.
I know. But
I was very much into rap in high school. I listened to a lot of Jay-Z and Young Guns. But I also loved Incubus in high school. So yeah. There you go.
So do you have a favorite band? Or would that not be proper for you to say?
That's hard. Favorite band. I mean, probably I'd have to say the Beatles, which is super cliche.
Yeah, but you know.
But I mean.
but you know, the thing about the Beatles, and you know, I did at one point learn to play a little bit of guitar. Mm-hmm. I took guitar lessons, and I have a couple guitars laying around, and you know, I'm not proficient. It's a stretch to say that I could play through an entire song, but I learned enough about it to really have a deeper appreciation for music. Uh-huh. And Beatles music is really hard to play. Like, they didn't play anything simple.
No, they didn't.
They did. And I have a whole book of Beatles music that's all dumbed down with open chords. You know,
love it.
Easy Beatles. It was like my first music book, but.
But Blackbird was the first song I learned on the guitar. So there you go. Wow.
So did you learn it like they played it or?
I don't know, actually. I don't know how they played it.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it also doesn't matter because, yeah, you can, the thing, you're the one playing it, you know, right. not them. So,
yeah. Well, that's the great thing about guitar, too. It's like you can be a classical guitarist or you can learn three chords and enjoy it every bit as much either way and can explore it indefinitely. It's really cool.
It is.
Yeah. So, yeah, Beatles is a solid choice. I've become a Wilco guy over the years.
Okay.
Which has led me down all sorts of different paths of different music, like just because of stuff that they cover it live, you know, like the Kinks and you know, a lot of like deep cut kink stuff. And Ian, if you know who Ian Hunter is, I'm trying to think of the name of the band he had. It's one of the British, a lot of 70s stuff. I really like the 70s stuff a lot.
Same.
Yeah. But the last show I saw was Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit down here in Fort Lauderdale.
Cool.
It was at like the weirdest, some kind of community center that was brand new. And it was, I don't know, it was kind of like a cross between a high school gym and a convention center or something. And the seating was really weird. And all the lights went out in the middle of the show. Oh. And after a couple minutes, he was like, okay, I'm going to let you guys figure this out, and we're going to come back when, and, you know, it happened in the middle of a song, and he came back and started over and got a little touchy there.
I've seen that happen a few times with different bands. You know, it happens.
Yeah, and he is, you know, I have to say, probably if I have a dream guest, I would love to have him on here. That's kind of like, if I can get this show to the point where I can have the Jason Isbells of the world on here, I'd love to be able to do that.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'll put it in his ear. I'm photographing him. I'm photographing him on Tuesday next week.
Are you seriously?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and I saw, did you photograph, now she, Amanda Shires, just had a record come out last week, right? Last week or the week before.
A single.
Right.
Yep.
And now, did you shoot for that?
I did. Yeah, that was a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think that's probably when I noticed you.
Yeah. Yeah, I went out to their place and photographed them together and with their daughter, Mercy. And then Amanda and I did a bunch of solo photos of her for her music.
Yeah, and you did the High Women stuff.
I did, too. Yeah.
But yeah, Jason Isbell, I write too, and he's such a writer. You know, he really, in terms of lyricists, he's as much a writer as anyone I can think of. You know, there are a lot of songwriters that are really poetic, but just the depth of the craft in his music is really impressive. And I kind of was a late bloomer with him, didn't really start listening to him until 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
And, that's one of the things I love about music now is that there's just so much good music out there and so many different ways to consume it. You know, in the radio days, we were kind of limited to that, to whatever we were fed.
Right. Yep.
And it's just not like that anymore.
I know.
And
it's given a new voice for all of those indie artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing about it is it's really about the music too.
Right. It should be.
Yeah, it should. But, you know, I mean, when people think of the road life, you know, you think of like Almost Famous, the partying and the craziness and the drugs.
I mean, there is that too.
Yeah, but I just see
for some people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, you know, and it's like that in any part of life. But yeah, it's nice to see, like watching Wilco over the years. I don't know how familiar you are with them, but you know, Jeff Tweedy, it's like he created a life for him and his family. And, you know, he's always touring, but never gone for more than a couple weeks at a time. And he takes his family with him as much as he can. And, you know, it just is different than it would have been. So do you have a favorite professional experience thus far that you can, you say is the coolest job that you've gotten to do?
Let's see. Maybe going out to Joshua Tree to shoot Marty Stewart and the Fabulous Superlatives. I love Joshua Tree, so that was like a special time to kind of spend with them and be out there and just listening to them play acoustically in the desert. It was magical. Probably that, you know?
Yeah. So I know how you got into music photography. What was it that drew you to photography?
My oldest sister built a darkroom in our basement when I was a kid, and she would photograph her friends when she was in high school, and I'd watch her develop the photos and hang them up, and I thought it was super cool. But I never picked up a camera at the time. I didn't really have any interest at the time because I was so heavily into music. And then when I decided to go to Columbus College of Art and Design, you know, the whole first year of our studies there are, you know, you take everything and you don't have to declare your major until sophomore year. So I took painting, drawing, sculpture, you name it. And then I declared my major as interior design because that's another passion of mine. And then switched it a week later to photography because I had always been interested in it, but really knew nothing about the technical side or anything really about photography. So I just kind of chose it on a whim and ended up loving it. You know, I loved film. I loved that feeling of shooting film and processing and developing the film and your negatives and seeing the prints come to life in the darkroom. So that was it for me.
So now, but do you have a darkroom now?
I don't have a darkroom now, unfortunately. Turnaround times are a little too tight for that these days, but I shoot film.
You do.
And then I just have the negative scanned in.
Okay. So that's how you shoot.
Yep.
Okay. That's interesting. Because, you know, I had a sixth grade shop class where one of the things, there was a dark room and they taught us how to develop film. And
nice.
Yeah. And then, you know, I was on my high school newspaper staff and we had the dark room with the revolving door and all that. And I always,
that's great.
It's got to be different for especially younger photographers now, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It saddens me a little bit that they don't get to have that analog sort of, because it's such a tactile experience.
Right.
You know?
Me too. I mean, they didn't have photo classes in my high school at all. So I didn't experience it until college. But even my college now, they don't have a dark room anymore.
Yeah.
It's all digital. And that just like breaks my heart, because the darkroom is what made me fall in love with it. And I had to learn how to light in the studio with a large format camera. And you'll really learn how to light because you only get like two chances at your photo.
Right. Yeah.
It's just now you can put it on auto really, if you wanted to, with a digital camera or just use your iPhone. I mean,
yeah.
Everyone's a photographer now, which is great. Everything's being captured, but I think people don't really cherish the image like they used to.
Mm. I was watching a documentary last night about Reconstruction, and it was, that all took place as photography was emerging, as the daguerreotype was coming from France, and it was a way that African Americans used to kind of show that they were, you know, their dignity. They would go and get their pictures taken, well-dressed and everything. And it was like a cultural phenomenon at that time.
Right.
And the Civil War was that was probably a formative time in photography itself, right?
Yeah. 100%.
So, do you have a favorite photographer?
A few. Irving Penn is probably number one in my book. David Bailey is another one that I really love. There's a few, you know. And I reference their work a lot because it brings new inspiration for me.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Marshall, for sure. Avedon.
I just love culture. So, and part Same. Of what I wanted to be able to do with this podcast is just bring it all together. I creative people fascinate me. With the context of this podcast, you know, it's about personal authenticity. To me, it's always just seemed like if there's any subset of the population that tends to walk to the beat of their own drummer, it's creatives, you know? And, you know, maybe because I grew up in a factory town where the arts weren't honored as much, and kids, as I was growing up, like if they wanted to be in a band or wanted to be an artist or act or anything like that, it was like, well, you need to grow up and let go of that. That's a dream.
Right.
It was just so outside the realm of possibilities in the minds of the adults where I grew up.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
it's a shame.
It is a shame. You know, I think you should always live your life in a childlike state, you know, and have that ooh and awe over everything forever, you know, like my niece and nephew, they say, wow, you know, and it's like, yeah, that you're right.
Yeah.
It's a state but I was of also awe. Exactly. And you should always have those kinds of eyes because you never know what you're going to see or experience. And you never know how that's going to affect you and inspire you to create something new. I was fortunate though, when I was growing up, my parents owned their own business. It was called Gafkin Stitch and Fix.
Okay.
And my mom was a seamstress and made clothes. She made wedding dresses. She made you name it. And my dad fixed sewing machines and still does. So they had their own little shop in downtown Marion, Ohio. And that's where all four of us kids would hang out after school and do our homework. And I'd run the register sometimes and greet people. And so I got to see firsthand my parents create something out of thin air, doing something that they loved.
Yeah.
So I knew it was possible.
Yeah. We don't think of entrepreneurship as a creative endeavor, but it really is.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have had an opportunity to help build a business from scratch. And it took that for me to really understand that, wow, this was an idea a year ago.
Right.
And now it's an institution.
And that takes creativity.
Yeah.
We're all creative people.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, what you're talking about, remaining or trying to recover that childlike state. I mean, there's a Picasso quote about that, the beginner's mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it is. And just getting back to that place where we turn off the part of our mind that edits what's originally there and what we would have responded to when we were children.
Right.
And that's where we have the answers. Like, they're already there. And so much of personal growth is really about unlearning.
Right.
And getting back to that original stuff. So, you're a pretty deep person, you know, and I noticed what you said, that what you would like people to say about you when you're gone was that you helped others love themselves more. What, how'd you arrive at that?
I like to help people. And I see when I photograph people and they see themselves through my lens, they see themselves in a whole different way. And hopefully they love themselves more when they see through my eyes, you know? And then maybe they can see themselves that way too. Because at the end of the day, love is everything. So.
Wow. That's certainly what I believe. No, and that's interesting because, you know, it's interesting to see how people are with having their pictures taken.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things I've learned in life is that, I mean, if you really tune in, there's so much you can, pick up on just by looking at a person's face, you know, and noticing, you can see when they're carrying tension or pain or if they're, self-conscious or what, you know, I mean, it's, and we don't think about that stuff, but it's instinctive that we pick up on these things and, you know, whether people are telling the truth or not, but like I'm someone who, you know, it has taken me a long time to get to the point where I'm comfortable having my picture taken, and I'm still not all that. I don't love it, you know? And I have a friend who is a birth photographer. Fantastic birth photographer. Yeah. I mean, she's won international awards and stuff.
Wow. I've done it once
for
my best friend.
Yeah. Well, and she's like, she's always loved childbirth, you know, and children. And so she's a doula.
Amazing.
She started out as a birth photographer and then kind of became a doula and now, is becoming a midwife as well. And, you know, it's a life mission for her, mm-hmm. you know, to help women and to just, acknowledge the sanctity of that process.
Right.
Which is so incredible. It really is.
Yeah.
But she took, like, I have a lot of photos for my website and the main cover art for the podcast. I mean, she took all that stuff.
Right.
And, but, you know, it's someone who's known me for 30 years.
Yeah. I know. That's.
And I'm happy with it, but that's part of the reason why, I think.
100%. Yeah. The hardest part of my job is the beginning of the photo shoot and getting everyone to be comfortable with me in, you know, a very short amount of time. That's kind of key because I would say 95% of the people I photograph do not like getting their photo taken, even though they might get their photo taken every other day because right. they're musicians. Right. They still don't like it.
Yeah.
And they're still very uncomfortable in front of the camera, you know? Mm-hmm. And so am I. I mean, I'm the same way. I would rather my best friend in college photograph me than anybody else, you
Is
know?
Is that who took your photos?
Actually, the ones that I sent you, I took self-portraits. That was like during COVID quarantine.
How did you do that? I mean, like with a timer?
Yeah, a timer.
Wow. Uh-huh. They're incredible. They really are awesome.
Thanks.
It's funny because I actually thought like it's amazing that she didn't take these herself because they're every bit as good as your photographs. So
thank you.
Now we know why. Yeah. So like, what do you do to help people become, I'm sure you've learned some things over the years about how to navigate that.
You know, I minored in art therapy in college, and so I took a lot of philosophy and psychology classes, and I just learned a lot about the mind, and I think I'm just really good at getting people to feel comfortable, and it's in different ways. Obviously, the music is a big thing during my photo shoots, and also just being a friend to them first is the biggest part, you know?
Yeah.
Forget the camera and the lights. Just having a conversation, which I do throughout my entire photo shoots always with whoever I'm photographing. Because we're both humans and I'm interested in them and I want them to forget about the fact that there's a camera in front of their face, you know, so.
Well, and I'm sure your musical experience helps you with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I connect with them on that level for sure. Just a mutual love of music.
So you play music while during your shoots? Is that one of the things that you do? And if it's, you know, Jason Isbell or whoever, is it their music generally that you would play or would you play something else or?
It depends. Some people will show up with their own playlist, you know, or they just, you know, but usually I'll put something together or my husband puts something together. He's a musician. And just based off of the vibe of the person, or I'll change the music throughout depending on how the day is going or what the vibe is like at the moment. Like if we need to chill out and I don't need them jumping around with their guitar, then we'll probably put on something chiller like JJ Cale or, you know, So yeah, the music is a big part because sometimes I need these people to pretend like they're on a stage and there's a huge audience watching them, you know, but we're just in a photo studio. So to get that energy up, I start dancing, they start dancing, you know, it becomes a dance party.
Oh, wow.
So it just depends on what kind of mood we're going for with the photos.
So how much of your work do you do in the studio as opposed to on location?
I would say probably 70-30. I do 70% studio. And then 30% on location. But, you know, each job's different and each job needs something different. So sometimes we have to shoot on location or sometimes we have to shoot in a studio. But I prefer studio portraits because it's a blank canvas. And I prefer those classic portraits where it's just the person that you're looking at and that's it, you know? Nothing else to distract, which is also another reason why black and white is my preferred film as well. Mm-hmm.
So now I know you've been in Rolling Stone. You've been all over the place, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. And you've done a lot of album covers. Mm-hmm. So how did you get to a point where you were submitting photos for publication like that? How did that emerge?
Well, you don't really submit photos for publication. Usually it's an assignment and they call me, or they are doing a story on a certain artist and they know that I've photographed them. So they reach out to see if I have anything that's never been published or, you know, but I actually interned at Rolling Stone, right out of college. Well, actually right out of college, I was an art director for Express and the clothing company. Yeah. And then I moved to New York because I wanted to be behind the camera, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I interned at Rolling Stone for a few months and assisted the photo editors there and kind of saw how the magazine worked, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I went to Austin for South by Southwest for my first time and took my camera on my own dime and photographed as many bands as I could. Came back to the office and showed the photo editors my stuff, and I got my first photos published in Rolling Stone that year.
Wow.
So that's how that happened. But, you know, as far as like the albums and the press photos of different artists, it's been an organic experience for me. I've never had an agent. Everything is word of mouth for my business. It's, you know, managers talking to managers, label people talking to managers, artists telling their managers or labels, hey, I want to work with this person. Or, you know, artists talking to other artists, hey, who have you worked with lately that you love or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's how my business has grown. And I'm happy about that, you know, because it's authentic. And that means that they're hiring me because they actually really like my work. You know? Right.
Yeah, you earned it.
Right. Yeah. Mm. It took a little longer. Yeah. But that's okay.
So, do you have any like major project goals or anything like that? Like a series or a book or anything like that?
I mean, I would love to put together a book of my work here in Nashville the last 10 years for sure. That's something I would love to do. Portraits of musicians, mm-hmm. Like a Nashville series book. But I also have like personal projects, you know. I'm currently working on a project with two other women in town, photographing people of color, mm-hmm. and doing a podcast with all of these people, interviewing them and talking to them and listening to their stories as people of color and their experience and where they're from and where they live now and how we can, you know, make change for the future of people of color, for the children, you know? So that's a project we're working on right now. And, you know, maybe make it into a book or a gallery show, depending on COVID. You never know.
Yeah. So now the podcast part, are you producing that yet? Or where are you in that part?
Yeah. So each person that comes in to get photographed is interviewed first, sort of like this. Amanda and Ebony interview them, and then they come into my studio and get their portrait taken.
So are the episodes out? I mean,
they're not yet.
Okay. Well, I'm asking because I keep me posted if there's something I can do to help.
Okay.
Like, yeah. You know, promote it or whatever. I'd be more than happy to do
Thank
that.
Thank you. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, because ultimately, I mean, what this is about is doing good.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the reason.
And influencing others to be authentic to themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But in one of the things that there's an artist in Austin who I've had on here. Her name's Heather Sundquist Hall. And I had her do a piece to use for cover art for the 100th episode, which this one we're on is around 91, 92. I'm not sure yet, but I'm getting close. So,
nice.
So we've been planning on this for a while. And so it's all done. She just started promoting it a couple days ago on social media herself. And what we're going to do is a portion of the proceeds is going to go to a charitable foundation called the I Speak Media Foundation. And it is about media literacy, which teaching kids.
Yeah.
About the media, which is
it's so crucial.
Critical right now. I mean, it drives me crazy. Like, I had my high school journalism teacher on here not all that long ago talking about this stuff because people really don't get it.
No.
In terms of what credible sources are and what aren't.
Right.
And there's so much, literally so much propaganda that, I mean, it's messaging is manipulated constantly to control us. And, it just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. It's infuriating. That's for sure.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who thinks so.
No, you're not.
Yeah. And it's just such a strange time. There have been a number of times in the last year when I've thought pretty often, actually, I don't want to wish my life away or anything like that, but I'll be glad when we get to the part where we can look back on this period of time with some historical perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
and we're past all this mania.
Right.
Because it's really like people are so out of touch with reality right now.
They are. And I feel like right now, more than ever, everyone needs to be looking inside of themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And not at anything else.
Yeah. Well, and I've talked about this a little bit on the podcast. To me, the whole COVID-19 thing, that's what it is. It has been an opportunity for us to reevaluate who we are, where we are, what we're doing with our time. Is this really how I want to live? And you have, like, I've changed things. Sounds like you have too. I know a lot of people. I mean, it's been an opportunity for every business to think outside the box and be creative.
Right.
But there's still so many people who just want to go back to the way things were.
I know.
And I'm like, well, that wasn't really good enough. Like, don't you want it to be any better than that?
Right.
And that's part of the reason I saw a need for something like this podcast, because we're just kind of trained to do things a certain way, as a society, and we get locked into that, you know? Go to high school, graduate, go to college, get a job, work 9 to 5,
get your 401k,
making money for somebody else. Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Save all the money so you can enjoy retirement.
Right. But be miserable up until that.
Right.
You know? But you might not live forever.
Right. Well, and also, like, I don't know. I did a post on social media not all that long ago just saying you're not supposed to hate your job. Like,
right.
Because that's the going back to what I was talking about earlier, where creativity, I've seen it be discouraged so much. Mm-hmm. There's just this belief that, well, that's what makes it work. It sucks. That's what makes it work. Well, like, that's not what your reality is.
Nope.
And it's not what my reality is.
I will say doing what you love is a lot harder than just showing up and clocking in, obviously.
So,
you know,
elaborate on that.
Well, in order to make a living at doing what you love, I think you have to work 10 times harder for it, but you have to want it, you know? Mm. It's not easy. You have to go through a lot of ups and downs and a lot of no's, and but you have to believe it in yourself that this is the only path for you. Mm. And just, you have to do whatever it takes to get there. And that's what I did. And, you know, I think if you can conceive it in your mind, you can make it into a reality.
Yeah. My history is, you know, I kind of, needed the favor of my family so much that I didn't follow my heart. You know, mm-hmm. It was like, well, you know, people always need a carpenter or a plumber. Maybe you ought to get a trade. And I did, you know, and
yeah.
And then, which I'm glad I learned that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I hung a bunch of shelves today. Like, nobody had to teach me how to do it. Like, I know how to work with tools.
But trades are great. I think if you can learn as many trades as possible, I think that's brilliant, you know?
Yeah, but I'm not a carpenter. You know what I mean? That's not, uh-huh. That wasn't what was on my heart. And I did it. And my experience was, you know, I nearly drank myself to death by the time I was 23 years old because it was an existential crisis.
Yeah.
That's what it was. I was like, this is not what I wanted. And I feel stuck and my life doesn't have any meaning. And I was just stuck. And so to me, I just see so much of that. And I work with a lot of young guys. And there's so many parents out there who project their fears onto their kids. Yeah. And I don't want you to do that. I mean, this is what they're saying unconsciously. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to do that because I'm afraid you won't be able to make a living for yourself if you do that. And the only message the kid gets is they don't believe in me.
Right.
So then,
which is not really the message. Yeah. I don't think that's the message the parents are actually sending. I think it's coming from a loving place.
It is.
But yeah.
It is. But, you know, one of the things, and I have a 14-year-old son, but I've always understood, like, the job of a parent is to teach them how to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hard to let go, but you have to let go. And, you know, for me, having seen all this stuff, I can be intentional and let go because I do believe in him.
Right.
And convey that message to him. Like, you really can do anything.
Yeah. If he doesn't see you believing in him, then how is he going to believe in himself at a young age, you know?
Right.
And he has to know that he can be his own unique self too. And that is okay.
Yeah. You know, I always like to climb trees and stuff, but he is a climber. And trees down here, I mean, you can climb forever. I mean, you can be up 50 feet.
And maybe he's going to be an arborist.
Well, no, but not as much now, but as when he was younger, I'd take him to the park and stuff. And, you know, before I knew it, he'd be, I mean, and my heart would be pounding like just so much fear that, And I did my best to not. Okay, because I'm afraid of heights doesn't mean he has to be afraid of heights, but also I don't want him to break his neck. You know, the way I bargained with myself over that is, okay, dude, like I can only tolerate this for so long. So I'm going to tell you when I can't take it anymore, and then you need to come down, rather than just telling him not to do it.
Yeah.
Which is what I think most parents would do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then they'll live in fear their whole lives.
Right.
Of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, you're teaching them how to manage their fear. And we all have fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All the time. So, all right. So you would like to do a book of portraits of your Nashville work over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing the podcast thing and collaborating. Any big dream stuff that's out there that.
I mean, I don't know. I've always loved interior design, so I'm starting to dip my toe into that.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep creating. I mean, that's the dream. Yeah. I love traveling, so continue to do that. Eventually.
Yeah. I mean, so what have you gotten out of this COVID stuff? What have you learned about yourself, or how have you grown?
Well, I've always been, a pretty healthy person. I've always been like active, dancing growing up, and then I ran through all of my 20s. I was a runner, and I've started working out at home now because of COVID, and I'm really enjoying it. And it's like the best physical thing that I've ever done for myself. So that's been huge for my mind and body. And reading more, taking more time out for myself, and turning off everything else. Not taking myself too seriously or my work too seriously. That's been a big thing.
I mean, I worked from home most of the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I would see clients and face to face. I'm just beginning to do that some more, but I have a lot of clients who, you know, have had these big jobs where they're going to the office every day for decades, some of them, and I would work through with them some of the, you know, how to manage boundaries and stress and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly they're plucked out of that and they're working from home and for months, you know, and it's like, wow, I'm so much happier now.
Yeah.
And that's been cool to watch. It's been cool to see people, recognize that there are other possibilities.
Right. It doesn't have to be a certain way for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the thing about just kind of going for it with what you want, and you were talking about, you know, maybe it's even harder to do that than it is to be a working stiff. I believe what COVID has taught us, if we're willing to accept the lesson, is that there is no security. I mean, it's really a myth. Like, there is no such thing as security. Anything could change at any mm-hmm. given moment. And I think a lot of us don't do those things we love because we don't see a way that they'll pay the bills.
Right.
And for me to get to the point where I did this, and there was other creative stuff that I've had wanted to do for a really long time, but, you know, I kept every job I took, well, maybe this will be the last one. Mm-hmm. This will be the last one. And I just decided after I had a contract that that was a 3-month contract that ended up lasting almost 3 years. And when it came to an end, I was just like, I'm not doing it again.
Yeah.
If I'm not going to do this now, when am I going to do it? And so I went for it and just, you know, got to a place where, okay, I'm going to find a way to only work enough to cover my expenses and then use all the other time that I have to do creative stuff. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of it was this podcast, but, and it was hard. It was hard. I mean, I had to demonstrate that I was committed because it got touchy, you know, but also when you're passionate about something, when you love something, it comes through in the work.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a quality that the work you do and the job that you hate will never have.
Right.
And I've come to believe that that is the way to succeed. And to some degree, work is hard. I mean, we'll always have challenges and stuff, but would you rather toil doing something you have absolutely no interest in or marginal interest in or something that you know you love?
Right. To me, the answer is a no-brainer.
It is. It is. Absolutely. Like, and, you know, one of the things I'll tell younger people, like, if you don't know what you want to do, like, find your people.
Mm-hmm.
Go where your people are. You might know where they are, but you, so, and that's kind of what you did, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, you're living in the midst of what you love, surrounded by things and people you love.
Right.
What's better than that?
I know. You know, I waitressed for 10 years, mm-hmm. During college and then out of college a little bit, before college, even I waitressed, but during college I was in, you know, I was in school and I was studying photography, and everyone that I would serve food to, they would ask me, you know, about myself. And I told everyone I was a photographer. And that led me to meet the CEO of Victoria's Secret, which led me to get an assisting job with their main photographer in New York and LA. And I was skipping class to go to New York and LA to assist this photographer on these Victoria's Secret shoots. So if you don't believe it in yourself and you don't tell everybody else about it, nobody's going to know. And nobody's going to be able to help you.
Yeah. So. Well, and that demonstrates something that I say all the time is that, you know, every job leads to the next job.
Right.
And you never know how it's all going to, you never know who you're going to meet.
Right.
So you've gotten to do some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. Kind of a wide variety. I studied abroad in Italy too when I was in school. I worked at an Italian restaurant in Columbus called Giuseppe's Retrovo. Giuseppe was the chef. Mm-hmm. And his wife, Vesna, is from Macedonia. And they became kind of like second parents to me. And Giuseppe's cousin's son came over in the summers to work at the restaurant from Florence. And I became friends with him and his friend, Otto. And we would always hang out. And Marco was like, if you ever want to live in Italy, you can live with my family. And so there was a study abroad program at CCAD, at Saatchi Studio Art Center International in Florence. And so I signed up and I took one short Italian course and I moved to Italy for 6 months. Wow. And learned Italian by living with an Italian family. And it was probably the best experience of my life. I photographed them. That was my main project that I brought back to school in Ohio. I studied high Renaissance art. We went to Rome. We went to Venice. We saw everything that you can imagine. And it was an incredible experience.
Wow. So. All right. So if there was a time in your life when the younger Elise would have needed a word of advice, when would that have been, and what would you tell her?
When would that have been? Probably when I first went to college and I had no idea what I wanted to do, which in case, in hindsight, I tell everyone that's like graduating high school, if they don't know what they want to do, take the year off, you know, figure that out. That's probably what I would have told myself then. However, I'm glad I didn't do that. Yeah. So it's a little contradictory. I thought I was going to go to school for music, but one of my older sisters ended up going to school for music. And I was like, well, then I'm not going to do that. And all of my siblings were great artists. And I was like, well, I'll try out art school. So I got into Art Institute of Chicago and Columbus College of Art and Design and Kent State. And I went for CCAD, and, I'm glad I did it. It's not for everyone, but I guess that would have been the time, like, just follow your gut and you'll know if it's not right. And if you need to change paths, just don't worry or stress about it, because everything will happen in time. So
I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was a kid. I mean, I knew there were things I wanted to do. I knew there were things I was good at, and I kind of generally deep down knew what kind of life I wanted to live. But I didn't know. And I think, I don't know if it's the same way with women, but with guys, it's like there's this idea that you're supposed to know. But what I learned about myself eventually is that I run on intuition a lot. I mean, that's
same.
And it's like, it's okay not to know. Like, what works out well for me is watching how things unfold, looking for opportunities and seizing them when I find them. And it's an exciting way to live, too.
It is.
The mystery. But it took me a long time to get to the point where I wasn't beating myself up for not having the answers.
Right. And you have to let go of that fear of the unknown.
Yeah. Well, this has been great. I'm really excited to, have your contribution to this project of mine. So thank you very much. I appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome.
And, I mean it about that other podcast. If there's something that I can do to help promote it, I want to be able to do that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we'll definitely let you know.
And if you ever want to come back, any projects, anything you want to promote, let me know. I'd love to help.
Fantastic.
All right.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. There you go. Another episode in the books. Thanks for listening. You can learn more about the show and this episode's guest at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you enjoy this episode, please share it with someone. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Every little bit helps. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. If you're so inclined, check out the Patreon community. As soon as I do these interviews, I upload them to Patreon, where the content is only available to patrons and for just a couple bucks a month.
I usually post audio content there, exclusive audio content, probably 8 times a month, if not more. And as these new episodes are released, as soon as they're done, they're available to patrons. So sometimes that might be 2 weeks before an episode is released, or even longer. Usually it's a few days. Anyway, if you want to support the show, that's a great way to do it. So thanks again for investing your time. It's a big deal to me. Thank you for supporting me and supporting the show. I hope you keep coming back. Be nice.
That's our story. I hope you enjoyed the punk rock opera. And we have one last piece of music for you. It goes like this.
Thank you. Good night.